RadioArchives.com presents Blueprints of Crime, An Adventure of the Black Bat by G. Wayman Jones, read by Milton Bagby. Out of the night comes a menacing winged figure, the Black Bat. Blind District Attorney Tony Quinn takes his battle for justice from the courtrooms to the streets, prowling the city skyline as the Black Bat. His prey, criminals who live beyond the reach of the law. Masked, cloaked like a gigantic bat, and able to see in pitch darkness, the Black Bat is assisted by hulking Butch O'Leary and former con man Silk Kirby, as well as the resourceful Carol Baldwin, the daughter of the lawman who donated his eyes so that Tony Quinn could resume his war against the underworld. A war to the death, fought with scientific skill and blazing 45 automatics. Operating outside the law, the Black Bat is relentlessly hounded by police captain McGrath, who suspects that the blind DA is really the human bat who breaks laws in order to uphold justice. And now, the Black Bat's thrilling adventure, Blueprints of Crime. Chapter 1. Murder from the Sky. There were seven men in the plane besides the lone pilot. They were cheaply dressed, mostly in dark suits, white shirts, and somber neckties. Two things each of these seven men held in common. They were nervous, for this was their first flight. And they were cruel-looking men. Singly, this trait of cruelty might not have been noticed. One pair of ice-cold eyes or grim lips are hardly noticed. But when seven men in a single group possess these characteristics, they are emphasized. They smoked cigarettes, chain fashion, stamping out the butts on the aisle floor. Each man had a suitcase, every bag exactly the same. They didn't talk much, and when they did, it was in monosyllables. The plane banked slightly, and the door to the pilot's cabin opened. The pilot shouted over his shoulder, "Okay for change. We'll be on target in 20 minutes. One of the chill-eyed men said, "4 hours and we're here? How fast has this crate been going? 4 hours. It used to take me 26 on the fastest train." "You were out of circulation too long," one of the others laughed. "Things move fast these days." Six of the men opened their suitcases, draped sports slacks and loud jackets over the backs of their chairs, and started changing clothes. In 5 minutes, they had switched from somber-clad men to a group dressed in rather startling garb. Two-toned shoes, bright jackets, decorated shirts, all very expensive, did something for these men. They seemed to lose part of their harshness and changed to smiling individuals ready to go on a lark. That fallacy vanished when each man took out a short-barreled machine gun from the suitcases. They handled these weapons like a mother treats a new baby. Lovingly and tenderly they checked the weapons. Then one of them noticed the seventh man, who hadn't changed his clothes, but sat staring out of the window into the darkness. A tall, husky man walked down the aisle and stood beside this seventh man's chair.
"What's the matter, Rusty?"
He ruffled the man's hair.
"You need an engraved invitation?"
Slowly the man called Rusty got up.
"Look, boys," he said, "maybe we're a bunch of suckers. Did you ever think of that?"
"Suckers, he calls us," the tall man laughed derisively. "We were suckers when we sat in our cells wondering if we'd ever get out. What's the matter with you, Rusty?"
Rusty took a long breath. "Okay, Fritz, I can't hold it any longer. Sure, we got out of stir. That was fine. We got jobs, good jobs, too. They don't pay much, but we don't have to sneak down alleys whenever we see a cop. I like it that way. We got clean, comfortable rooms to live in. I'm making friends."